Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike, we got Max, we got Shane, and we got each other right now as we're recording a new episode for you, the listeners. Fellas, what's been going on?
It's all happening, man.
It's all happening.
What's happening?
Like, what's all?
I'm going to a lot of movies lately.
Oh, it is all happening. Jeez, oh my gosh. I'm glad I'm sitting down. What did you watch?
I mean, obviously now is the best time of year for good movies.
Oh,
and I do
fall,
love
baby.
Going to the movies, and the band's off the road, and I just have more time to do stuff like that. So I saw May, December.
I got to see
Julianne Moore, Natalie Portman. I saw the trailer a couple months ago when it did the film festival circuit before it came out.
I went in totally blind. So I knew nothing about it. I didn't even know who directed it. And I thought it was one of the coolest movies I've ever seen with like three or four very memorable scenes.
Have you seen his previous work, like Carol?
I passed through Carol. I don't know if I ever watched Carol.
Did he do the Bob Dylan movie?
Yeah.
I'm Not There. Yeah.
And I always, so you don't want to build something up too much because when you tell somebody to watch it and then they go, oh, that's the thing you're talking about. That was the scene that really rocked your boat. And I think part of it was that like I didn't know anything about it. So that's why it like hit that much harder. But there's a few, it's sneakily very funny. And the theater was very laughy. Like, we saw it at TIFF.
Is it campy or is it supposed to be campy?
It's intentionally campy. And it has, spoiler alert, I guess, some like 90s tabloid themes in it.
Why don't we set the premise for the audience, right? Like the idea,
and you learn it pretty quickly. So basically, Natalie Portman is an actress, and she's playing Julianne Moore, who is a famous person from the 90s who did something very
infamous.
Do you remember
infamous.
Mary Kay Letourneau is this is like a very famous 90s story where she fell in love with, I cannot remember the name of her student. Uh-huh. And
it was like 13, right?
Something like that. And it was an outrage and she left her family or her husband, whatever. And it was the biggest 90s sort of tabloid, late 90s, I think, basically. Anyway, I think they might still be together today. I remember seeing some story a couple years ago where it's like they built a family and they have this, it was a real love for whatever that's worth beyond sort of the crime that she committed of making love to a minor. Why do I call making love and not just sex or sexual assault? I don't know. But either way, they got together and they're there they've been together. They have a family, right? So this movie sort of fictionalizes.
Yeah.
They go, imagine if you were making a feature film and a famous Hollywood actor was coming to play this woman. Mm-hmm. And this is the premise, right? Like years later now.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. We probably shouldn't say anything more, but there's a couple of really, really funny scenes. And
wait, you didn't know any of this going in? You're just like, I like May, I like June. You just walk into
nothing. And all I know is that Brooklyn Maddie and Ash were excited to see it. And that's all I need to know.
Oh, it's May, December.
Yeah, I knew nothing. And I liked it so much that I actually went online and found the original spec script of the movie.
Wow.
And I read half of it. And Matt said, that's cheating. You're not allowed to do that. I was like, what do you mean you're not allowed to do that? He said, well, if you just read a script after the movie's been made, it's cheating because you're just watching the movie again.
In your head.
In your head.
Right.
Which I would agree with. Him calling it cheating was sort of weird.
No, that's a good tool, though, because you're like, okay, maybe I wouldn't have appreciated the script if I read it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I know if a script in this style can really work, if done perfectly.
But I think that's
smart that you did that.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of why I wanted to do it, because it was a spec script. So basically, this writer had never made a feature movie. Natalie Portman has a production company. She reads it. And she, I guess, had been sending scripts to Todd Haynes for the previous years, because she's a fan of his. And he's like, no, not for me. What are you doing, Mike?
I'm actually just going down a rabbit hole of Mary-Kate Letourneau right now.
No offense.
So now she's doing the exact same thing.
No offense, Max.
Apologies, Max.
No, reading a book.
I heard you say spec script or something, and then I was just like, yeah, going down the rabbit hole. Apologize. Phone's down. All right. Here we go. I'm engaged here.
But I was wondering, I was like, would I have liked the script if I just, never seen the movie? I was like, would this move me? And I don't think it would.
It's tough.
It's so crazy. And then I started asking the question. I was like, what is it about this script that made Natalie Portman go, this is amazing, it's so good, I'm going to send it to Todd Haynes? Todd Haynes has rejected a few of my ideas already. Todd Haynes then reads it and goes, yeah, this is the one for me. And as I was reading it, they didn't really change any of the dialogue. They changed the location. Originally, they had it said in Maine. Now it's said in Savannah, because they probably got a tax break in Georgia. And so I was kind of fascinated by that, because I was like, these people who read scripts all day long, like, do I trust them? Like, I don't know. It seems so fucking random.
Well, sometimes you do a little bit. It's like wine, right? If you're drinking a bunch of wine, you know more about the wine. Yeah. You know more about music than me. I still know what a good song is. You could probably say why it's good and have references to compare it to and find nuance that I couldn't detect.
Yeah. Also, I think there is
still a crapshoot, but you know what I mean?
It's a crapshoot, but also it kind of has to do with just like, who are the auteurs of the time? Who are the best producers of the time? Who are the best actors? And I guess it starts with the director. And if you just happen to like pique a director's interest with a particular script, and then you're like, go to work. And then the director can shape so much of it, because he's like, oh, that director's doing it. Yeah. Julianne Moore in, Natalie Portman in, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, give Todd Haynes any script and it'll probably be pretty good, because you're getting top tier talent to work on it. Right?
Yeah. And taking something kind of sleazy and making it artistic, I think is a very cool thing to do.
Yeah. And I liked it. It was funny. And which relates to another movie I just saw last night, had no idea what it was about. Again, went in completely blind. It's called
Leave the World Behind.
Leave the world behind. We're not talking about that. That's right. By the guy that did Mr. Robot. I'm so excited for this film, okay. Julia Roberts. I cannot wait. I've been waiting for it to come out, but I don't want to know shit.
Okay. Good.
I don't even want to know if you liked or didn't like it.
Okay.
Actually, you can say if you liked or didn't like it, but I'm like, I assume you.
Oh, wait, wow. You opened it with that you liked it, right?
Yeah. Didn't
you?
Okay. I didn't. I missed that.
Yeah. Okay. Because when you're reading Wikipedia.
Well, you were talking about directors and how they can affect a project, which reminds me of, I just read, so there's this book out about the OC. It's like the oral history of the OC. Mm. I'm not an OC guy. I did not watch the OC, but I was like, it was around when I was growing up. Obviously, like, I was kind of in the age pocket, but I'm not a guy that watched it. Like, my brother and Dan, when I lived with them, were like obsessed with the OC. I never watched, but I know the characters. I know generally what
it
is.
Do you think I look like Adam Brody, Seth?
No.
Yeah, not really.
Not at all.
Really?
Maybe the curly hair?
I'm not saying you're an ugly man, but I'm saying you do not
Jewish.
Look like...
I celebrate Chris McCarr. I have cool interest in indie rock music from the early 2000s.
Oh, who's told you look like it?
I think on my floor in first year at McMaster, I was sort of known as the Seth guy, because I was into band stuff, half Jewish.
Okay.
Well, sure, if you have to pick a character you're like, then yes.
It's between him and Misha Barton, then you clearly end up closer to Seth.
Yeah. All right, never mind. Forget I brought it up.
Yeah. No, it's nice. There's similarities.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for nothing, Shane.
You're handsome. You're like that handsome guy in that Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, that guy's really handsome.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mike.
Sorry, Sam Ishmael.
So, we're not talking Leave the World Behind, which I'm very excited about, though. Like, very, very excited.
Can you watch
it
in the theater, please?
I'm going to. Okay, I actually went to the theater to see a movie.
Okay.
I saw the new Nicolas Cage.
Oh, how was it?
It was great. Have you guys heard about this Dream Scenario?
No, is any good? Say no more.
Okay. Yeah, I actually want to see it, though.
Yeah.
And I am doing an OC rewatch, so please. No, I'm joking. No,
So anyway.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about this.
I'm not a huge OC guy, but I'm very aware of it. It's this pop culture phenomenon. And Alan Sepinwall, who I've talked about in the last episode, actually, I like his critic. He wrote an oral history book about the show. So he's been promoting on his Twitter. Now, I'm not going to read the book, but all these publications are printing excerpts from it. So it's like, you know, so they talk like there was a huge thing on Misha Barton's exit and how they had to like get rid of her.
Why
like
did
they,
she, why did
they
she
killed
exit?
Her off. It's like it's an interesting article, but basically her, she has a momager and that was difficult. And even those conversations. But anyway, the book, it because you know it, it's such a famous thing and you can picture all the people. These excerpts are great, but I like to read them in like, oh, you're just printing like what would be four pages of the book as opposed to me committing to the whole book. Mm-hmm. I just read an excerpt. I don't know. It was in Cosmopolitan or something all about the pilot, which is just. Mm-hmm. We love this kind of shit. Yeah. McG was originally the director because he's a producer on it. He ends up backing out. This guy, Doug Lineman, ends up doing
Swingers.
It, who's way more indie, mm-hmm. handheld, all the shit. And they go so deep. But Doug's a weird guy. Like they talk about. So at the same time, he was directing that big movie, Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Mm-hmm. So he basically takes the OC pilot, but he's also prepping this feature for once he's done shooting the pilot. But there's this crazy story where he's like, he's basically, they're shooting a thing on a lake, a scene on a lake or whatever. And he's in the boat and he realizes he's late for one of these Mr. and Mrs. Smith meetings. So he just jumps out of the boat and swims to shore to go to his meeting. And he says, the DP knows what I need to do. He goes, the actors are prepared. Just shoot it and I'll be back. And
he swam to shore. On the boat.
So he's in a boat shooting. The actors are in a boat to be filmed or whatever. And he's supposed to be there to direct it. But he's like, the DP knows exactly what I want. And the actors are prepared. I'll see you tomorrow.
To get ready for Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Because he had to go to another meeting for this big movie.
That's
so there's this
honestly
weird,
something I would do.
There's this weird tension because it's like, I think his name is Josh Schwartz is the creator. Yeah. And he's like, all of us began to really resent Mr. and Mrs. Smith because our director he wanted the big project was the thing he clearly was like, you know, he had been doing it first. But anyway, they get into sort of how much he changed the nature of the aesthetic of the pilot. Like just like the handheld camera stuff. Like they're like, Peter Gallagher, who plays the dad, is like, there's a scene where there's a house on fire or something. And the cameraman's supposed to be focused on the house on fire. And like, they're not in the shot. And he's like, no. Start over here and then come over. Like, find the fire in the frame. All these little touches, though, alter, like, they change so much of it. And the editor on it was like, yeah, he's like, Doug was he's an interesting guy. He came in and he saw my first edit of like, whatever, some scene. And he goes, this is the worst edit I've ever seen in my life. And he goes, oh, geez. He goes, and then I continue showing the edit. And then it's the scene where Rachel Bilson comes in for the first time or whatever. He goes, this is one of the best scenes I've ever. He's like, this is perfect. He's like, don't change a single thing. It's perfect. Mm. And he goes, and what I realize is it's like, this guy is going to be completely honest with me, good or bad. He's like, so it made me just be like, it's like, oh, he's not holding back praise or like being unnecessarily mean. He's like, that's how he felt about that cut that he saw of that scene. He goes, and this is how he felt about this guy. He's like, so then I just got to work. And all of them, the actor to a person was like, we love that guy. And that guy ended up keeping, he ended up giving Adam Brody, is that his name?
Yeah.
A scene in a role in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And he was like, I didn't want to, this is also a very Max thing. So they have the set that the house for the OC, which is like built on a lot. It's in a soundstage or whatever. And at night, he didn't want to drive home and then just turn around and come back to the set. So he would sleep in Seth's room. on the set. And so one of the producers is like, one day I'm going back to set because I got to do some construction overnight. And I see shoes and then I see pants.
I love this.
And I'm like, Doug, like, are you? He's like, yep, just going to get some sleep.
Oh, it was Doug, not Adam Brody.
It was Doug Lineman.
Oh,
wow.
The director would stay in the house and he felt very close to the Seth character. But anyway, he was just such a unique guy. And then even McG comes in and he's like, Doug did things with that pilot. He's like, that I never would have done. I was so obsessed with like color scheme and the opulence of the OC. And I was going to do it in a completely different, slick way. He's like, and Doug kind of took the material and then had this aesthetic language for it. And that's what made it one. And people are all like, it's one of the best pilots I've ever seen in my career, blah, blah, blah. It got an immediate like sort of order based on like a sizzle reel.
Wow.
And it's crazy. And then they get into, who's that cat that you wrote with? Phantom Planet.
California.
Alex Greenwald.
Greenwald's in here quoted, like talking about how his song came to be, like the theme.
Oh, because that's a huge song.
It's great. I'll send you guys the article.
Oh, that is
but
so cool.
When you just said it starts with the director and how things can go so different with all of these things. It's like the course of sort of entertainment history was changed because Doug Lineman takes the
What's
job.
What's Lineman doing these days? Because it seems like that question. Work ethic would not go over well with Gen Z's. Just too abrasive, too weird.
They were
too
saying
invasive.
Mm-hmm. Even then, they said it was hard for the young act. Peter Gallagher was like, he's like, listen, like I don't, or maybe it was Tate Donovan. Was like, we don't mind. Like I can work that way. Like, how do you want the scene? How are we going to do it? He's like, but his lack of like enthusiasm and praise and more just direct conversation. He said it messed with the four young ones maybe a little bit more because, I mean, I think for Misha Barton's the first acting role. I don't know about Rachel Bilson, but there was like, they made, he's like, all actors want to hear is you're great. Like, keep doing this, or you got to handle them in a way, you know, whatever. They're sensitive, artistic souls. And I think he was just almost like straight ahead, like X, Y, Z. But all of them, though, in this oral history, like, I love him. I love him. I'd work with him again. He was, he's a real one, basically. And Peter Gallagher went out of his way to basically say, listen, if I thought the way that he operated was like, because he wanted to hurt or wield his intelligence to sort of be like malicious, he's like, I would not speak about him the way I speak about him today. He's like, he's just a very direct person and he's quirky and weird. And then Doug Liman's in there like admitting, he's like, oh yeah, he's like, I had to get in the water. He's like, I had to swim. I had the meeting at the Mr. Smith. Like, it's just like, interesting read though. It's good stuff.
It's so funny though. Those anecdotes I find to be so dangerous though, because if that attitude is put in the wrong hands, you're just dealing with someone who will never get anywhere far. Do you know what I mean? Someone's like, yeah, I just got to do the Liman thing, because you know, he turns out to be right in the end. I know some people that it's just like, oh yeah, like that's the thing that gets results, and I'm just like, oh, like it works for Liman.
It's tricky,
but for a lot of people, it's like, fuck that guy. I hate communicating with that guy. That guy is so difficult. That guy doesn't want to be told what to do. But then that guy's always like, work for Liman. Like, I have to be true to myself. Why do I have to sugarcoat shit?
Yeah. He's not putting it on. I think that's the difference. You can feel sometimes when people are like putting it on. Well, there's a great anecdote too about Doug. So he's like, he'll just grab the camera. So there's like a scene, I guess it's like the last scene where the sun is going down and Ryan is leaving whatever to go back to his home in Chino or whatever. And it's like, they've already shot Misha, I guess, in that scene. I can't picture the scene because I'm not a huge fan of the show, but apparently it's like, we'd shot her already and the day was wrapping and the sun was going down and we were like out of time. And basically, in order for Doug to explain what he needed, the way he saw the scene, he just didn't have time. So he just grabbed the camera himself and he got in the car with Peter Gallagher and the guy that plays Ryan, Ben McKenzie. And he films the shot like of, I guess, the sun going down and sort of driving away from her. And he's like, it's maybe like the most beautiful shot in the whole series, where it's Josh Schwartz is talking about this, the creator. And it's like, it sort of speaks to just Doug being like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. They're like, most directors are like, we got the coverage. Like, we have the shot, you go. And those kinds of like, willing to push it are how you sort of get, I think, maybe art that is greater than the sum of its parts, or how much time you have to actually do it on paper. It's like, oh, that guy like made a scene happen that now lives forever and means something to people.
Okay, well, related to that, we sent a podcast to the group, Talk Easy Podcast. It was an interview with Benny Safdie. Did you guys listen to that one yet?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, I'm on my second time listening to it while sleeping.
Yeah, sure.
So I always get to the 30-minute mark.
Benny Safdie, who did Uncut Gems, he has this new show with Nathan Fielder. Obviously, we're all fans of his.
We talked about him last episode.
Oh, we did? Okay.
Yeah.
He talks about...
I like that you do these pods and then you delete all information from your brain.
No idea.
You just move forward.
Have no clue. But he talks about how he is a boom operator often on set. Did you guys hear this part of the podcast?
That's where I fall asleep every time.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Yeah, because they cue him up like, tell him the boom story. Then he gets into it and I drift off. So
basically, when they're shooting low budget stuff, he realizes the boom operator is the only person that kind of gets to be near... like the action, and or actually has a better vantage point than you would have in monitor world or the DOP. So it's like, oh, I can actually observe what the actor is doing with their body in a really intimate way that I just wouldn't get. So I will just be the boom operator. I'll save us the money there and I'll just have a better feel for the scene and what needs to be done next. And I was like, oh, I fucking love that so much, because I think your POV on stuff when you work on any creative assignment is always very specific to like your job. And it kind of reminded me of something that I do that I kind of just invented, was for sound check. I don't often just stand on stage by my microphone. I'm often just like in the crowd looking at the band play.
Yeah.
Because I just want to know what it feels like to be someone in the audience. And sometimes I take out my ears and I like listen to what it's coming out through the PA. And I was like, oh, and I don't ever see any other lead singers sort of wandering around the venue trying to take in the show from different corners. But it's so informative for me. And I'm just happy that I just thought to do that. Anyway, and it's always validating when you hear somebody else do something like that, where like you break the conventions of the roles that you're supposed to have in your job. And you're like, no, I think this is actually just better and it works for me. So
He could actually, what was he saying? He's a scientist in real life, Benny?
Yeah. He's like a physicist or something.
Yeah. Do you think he could have really been a physicist?
I don't know. Yeah. But
the way he was bringing that up, I found very annoying.
Is that what he implied?
He's like, if I wasn't an actor, I was actually going to be a physicist.
Right.
And he kept crowbarring that in, and then And he's like, when I was talking to Chris, like, he's talking, about Chris Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, I was telling him this role is so perfect for me because I am a physicist at heart. And if my last movie didn't go well, which it did, I would have been a physicist. So, yeah, I found that a little.
But I thought it was cool, though, because he basically was like, we put out Daddy Long Legs in 2008. And then, like, nothing really happened for, like, 9 years and or 7, 8 years or whatever. And then Robert Pattinson reached out, and we did Good Time together. And that, and we always wanted to do Gems that entire time, but we just had to find other projects to do in the meanwhile. And he also had kids, because, you know, I'm of the mind, if you have kids, you can't do anything
Cosmo,
in life.
Cosmo, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he had kids very young. So there's still hope for all of us. Well, for you too.
I don't need hope. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I love my life.
That's insulting.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm kidding. That was supposed to be a joke.
Okay. I love my life.
I was playing with my kids on the weekend and I was just filled with such a sense of joy. I really was.
Good interview. You guys should listen to it.
Very, yes. Very good. Yeah. Yes. Dream scenario, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Interesting. But so I did go to the theater. Recently, and I'm going to go for Leave the World Behind. So
Leave the World Behind. Yeah, yeah.
May December feels like such a streamer to me. That's a streaming movie.
I just find the enjoyment I get out of being in a theater is always 25% better than anything you could ever experience at home. Not to say you can't love a movie at home, but I'm just saying it will be 25% better if you just watch it.
Because you probably can't pay attention to a movie.
There's also that.
Yeah. Yeah. Depends on who you are, but I feel like you can get into a movie at home.
I can. Put my phone on my desk and I'll actually watch if I'm trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for Dream Scenario, which was shot in like Burlington, sort of all around here is Canada, shoot Toronto. But there's like a restaurant. Anyway, it was a matinee and I went over and I grabbed I had my snacks and shit. And there's like only 4 other people in the theater. And there was a part, there's a really funny scene in the movie that made me like laugh out loud as I'm like eating my, my sandwich. And, as I was like laughing there, like with my sandwich alone out loud, I was just like, I love this. I love coming to a movie alone and just being in a matinee and just like sort of the joy of sort of
was
like,
was there anybody else in the theater?
There's like 4 or 5 other people or whatever. There's a couple.
There's one guy in the theater last night as we were watching the Leave the World Behind movie. Yeah.
There was only one other person.
No, there's 7 or 8 people maybe in the theater, but the a guy sitting behind us was just cackling at certain points in the craziest way. Like, I was like, it's not that funny.
Mike's kind of like that. Though. Mike has no laugh reflex.
No, like, what do you mean? Like,
I mean, you can't contain yourself at all. Like, we'll be in a dead quiet office with headphones in, and I won't duplicate what you just did because we are at work right now.
Yes, I get nervous when you started yelling like that.
But Mike will do that, and Mike will be on a plane. And laugh like that. And Danica will have to be like, shut
she
up. And
nervous.
Like, gets mortified.
Like, if I'm watching, what was that? What was the movie I was telling you I was watching on the plane? Oh, Stuber. I was watching Stuber on a plane years ago. And I was just laughing. It was a delight. It was a long flight home. And I could just tell every time I was laughing with my headphones in, Danica would just shut the fuck up. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, this is too much laughing. But I do that. I do that. I just can't, if something tickles me or something makes me laugh, I'm going to let it fly, man. It's the joy of life.
I
much
agree.
Like my children, which Max can't understand.
Can you ever hold it back though?
I don't
like
know
if you really wanted to, could you not laugh?
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I can. Yeah. All if right. I'm like, yeah. If I, yeah. Not. Why would one hold a laugh back though? Do you ever hold a laugh back?
All the time. Yeah. It's hard to make me laugh.
Right. But are you holding back consciously? Like, I'm just wondering if like.
I just don't want to laugh. Yeah. I'm not even trying. I want to laugh, but
do
it's.
Do you think that's a thing with funny people? Because you're not. Mike's a very funny person, but Shane, I feel like a lot of comedians don't actually laugh that much.
Like I don't know. It's just hard. Like, I don't find a lot of stuff funny. Mm-hmm. It's very hard.
Right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you watched all three episodes of The Curse?
No, I only thought the first two were out. And I fell asleep through the second one.
What's the,
but
the least
it.
Time?
I like the second one.
Is it like
one
Mondays?
Yeah, no, but or Tuesday nights, I think.
Right, yeah.
Or Fridays. Shane, what's going on with you?
I've been sleeping a lot through content. No, I don't know. I should have more to say. The New York thing was just my big thing. And
what
now
a
I've
story.
Got nothing.
What great. A story. Yeah, I've got nothing I sent that now. Around to a lot of people.
I have nothing. That's my thing.
You sent that around to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, so how does that man? Like, how does that look?
Well,
so
she's like, this is really funny. You should listen to Shane's
just send
story.
The pod yeah. to Rick
yeah.
Friends.
Yeah. Yeah. John, my father-in-law, John, is he's like, that was a great story. But you got two Ed McMahons, you know, working for you. I'm like, what do you mean?
He's insane.
I'm like, yeah, I guess. I'm like, Mike is actually like, he can't help himself. Mike just laughs if he genuinely finds something funny. He does help me out. But Max, he's the toughest guy. Like, he does not suffer fools. Like, to tell a story to you.
To get you fully engaged.
It's probably the toughest thing. Sean was even messaging me. He's like, oh, man, like, I don't know how you were able to tell that New York story with Max watching you. I was like, it was tough, and I had to edit a lot of parts out because you just give me the most like disapproving look. I don't know if you know you're doing it.
Oh, do I?
But you're just like dead behind the eyes, and you're just like, yeah.
Really? Oh, that's terrible.
No, it's actually good. And I think anyone who wants to get better at storytelling should tell you stories.
Let's offer this service.
That's shameful. Because I think of myself as a good, willing listener, but I guess I'm not.
But what's good is when you are tickled, you'll really give in to that tickling. Mm-hmm. You know, you do not hold back if you find something funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in particular, I told one joke, but it was the only joke that I had kind of pre-planned.
Mm.
It was about someone being behind me, like a model. It was kind of a hack setup joke. I was like, oh, there's this woman looking at me and I was feeling and it was a hack setup. You could see it a mile away. I say the line, and you're just like, and you were just, you were so disappointed. You're like, shut up. You know, it was like, move on. So that part I just condensed so much because I felt the hackness of it all. But
which is funny, too, because I, of the three of us, by far am the worst storyteller. I'm so long in the tooth. I go on and on and on. I don't have a punchline often. There's like no, I just start rambling. Really? You guys are so nice to me is my point. So thank you.
Well, you got two Ed McMahons too.
Yeah.
Maybe we're three Ed McMahons. Mm. Well, you just said you don't laugh. You laugh.
But you guys are funny. Right, you know, right, that's the thing. Yeah. You guys are genuinely funny. In general, I do not laugh that often though.
Yeah.
And I find it hard when someone tries to be funny to me because then they can see that I'm faking it.
I will polite laugh too for people in social situations because I don't, I want to put everyone at ease. So like say we're at a party and someone's telling a story or whatever. I want to help them along. Like in that situation, I find socially, like, I don't know if that makes me an empath or something, but I don't want to feel, I want to help them. So it's like, if I'm laughing a bit, maybe some other people will laugh or at least puts them at ease
and
in their storytelling.
And you help me on the show all the time. I'll be trying to explain something and then you could just see it in my eyes that I'm suffering.
When you start to like, yeah, go like, a bit off the path.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. And then you're like, I think what you're trying to say. And then you explain it perfectly in 3 seconds. It's great.
Sometimes I get nervous though that I cut you off a bit because.
I always appreciate it.
Okay, good.
Other people piss me off when they cut me off.
Right.
Book Club Maddie.
Who had the good joke about the previews.
Yeah, he did have a good joke about that.
But yeah, man, actually I want to give a shout out. I was at a local Hamilton establishment called Wildcat in the East End. A bunch of our friends live in the East End or whatever. Mm. But shout out Sean Dawson, who had a tough week, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
His car was
Stolen.
It was his baby.
Did he call you at the Wildcat to chat it out?
Did you not get that text?
No, I missed it.
He did not. No, I'm kidding. We were out there another time. It was a group of us. We're all hanging out at Wildcat. It was a good time. Anyway, it was for a Celtics game. I'd go out and watch a Celtics game. And so we end up all hanging out there. And
Uber?
What's that?
Do you Uber there or drive there?
I Uber.
Nice.
I'm going to drive. It's like Liam Gallagher, if you ever seen the interview where he's like, people always say, yo, come over for one beer. He's like, who's going to have one beer?
Yeah.
He's like, what, are you going to have one beer, tell me your dog died, and then I'm going to go home? It's like, no, we're going to say we're going to have fucking 100 beers. So I very much relate to Liam in that sense. Like, if I'm going to put my pants on and my shoes on, I'm going to go to the pub. I'm not like, you know, I'm not leaving in 20 minutes.
Like your pants. I forgot your pants are always off when you're home, right?
That's yeah, it, baby. I got to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danica's just like rolling her ass.
Yeah. So anyway, we're there and we're watching the game, and a nice fella came up named Greg, who is a fan, a listener of the pod.
Hey.
And he went out of his way to talk about how much he enjoys it and all this stuff. And he feels very akin to you and I because he has kids. And anyway, interesting guy. But he was with a bunch of guys. It was his birthday. So I'm going to give him a shout out on his birthday. And I actually meant to do this a couple pods ago because it was a while ago. But yeah, I did that thing where like, I was with our guys in like a booth in one end of the bar, but the bathroom, you have to pass him and his crew. Oh, he loves the vasectomy sketch, and him and his buddy watched the vasectomy sketch and laughed so hard they made their wives watch the vasectomy sketch. Their wives did not laugh as hard as them, which I then apologize.
No, of course not. Yeah.
It's like that thing where you want to show somebody something funny. But these guys like loved it. So in some ways it was awesome talking to this table because you just felt good and they're big fans of the pod and the sketch show and all this stuff. So anyway, when I passed the second time to go to the bathroom, like now I'm kind of built a jokey rapport with this crew of guys. Kind of remind me of the Champagne Boys a bit, but they were all there just for Greg's birthday. So they didn't fully know each other well. Anyway, I ended up fucking ditching our friends and just sitting with these guys for the next hour talking about the new Beatles song, the Beatles as a metaphor for life and how to work together. I'm just pontificating. Anyway, it was a really good hang, and I wanted to give Greg and his pals a shout out.
Mike has found a new captive audience. He's like, my old friends know all these stories already. They've heard every take ever. I got a new audience right here.
Oh, and then every once in a while, one of our buddies would like go to the bathroom and just see me at the table. And we're all like, ha, 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 chucking it up with like my new crew. Anyway, so I'm going out with them next week. So it'll be a good time.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, no, I'm not. But I did want, Greg was a sweetheart and I really, really, really liked him. So
Sean got his car stolen.
He did. Yeah.
So there's the dog.
The next day he got robbed again.
And he got robbed again. Yeah. So Mike D and our band has a vintage Miata 92.
Yeah.
Sean has some, what is it? What was it that he has?
Was it a Mustang?
No, it's not a Mustang.
I don't know. It's not a Mercedes.
No, it's like a 92 Ford something or other. I don't know. 88.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Alex said it was a Mercedes, but it's definitely not. No, it's definitely not.
And then Jay also has one. And they all, like, I think it was like a pandemic project where they're like, let's go find these like vintage cars that, like, to be clear, they're not like $200,000.
These are rich people cars. These are like lovers, car lovers. They put money into it, time, effort. Like they're like, they're trying. Yeah. It's like their little, what do they call them? The car boys or the dog house automotive. So they got this like little club of, you know, it's something they're really passionate about. Like the way they say, like, we love basketball or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, his car got stolen and then it was found like smashed up. Right.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Tough one.
Tough
like
one.
Really tough. And like so much. Like I just felt so bad because Sean loved that car so much. So hopefully it can be, restored. But
I think it's a lot of money. He's texting me.
Yeah, about it. I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, but that'd be a big ask. And this is why I don't like having anything I care about materially.
Yes,
you know what I mean. Just the second you start to care about something a little too much, might break your heart.
That's true.
I don't know if that's a lesson. It's probably not. But just for me,
was it better to love and lose than to never have loved at all?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Can't go through your life scared, man.
It's related to my kids' comment, I guess. It's,
maybe.
Yeah.
we really got to come up with topics, guys.
This has been like a review show. We've just
ten
done basically
minutes. Jesus.
We've been 10 minutes.
Okay.
This is the 10 minutes that Raptors. Feels like 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay. I know this show doesn't get poly charged very often, but I saw something in the news of note. So Jagmeet Singh, leader of the New Democratic Party, and Shane, that's like the left party.
Thanks.
He was caught outside of a mall with a brand new, what was it? Chick-fil-A? Versace bag.
Oh.
And I know he traditionally, he wears fine suits and that is part of his reputation.
He likes nicer things.
He likes nicer things. But if you're supposed to be representing the union man and woman, you're supposed to be like fighting the rich.
Aren't the NDP kind of like slightly socialist.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, but then he's got this, like, how much do you think that bag costs?
$3,000.
Dang, dude.
I have no idea. I just made that number up.
The bag's just a shopping bag. You don't know what the purchase
That's
is.
That's how much the shopping bag's cost?
Like, no, you don't know what he bought.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh. So he just picked up something from Versace.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. So I guess my question for you, Shane, if you're a socialist, can you rock Versace?
Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe if it's from Value Village, like if you thrifted it. Like I used to work at Talese and I had a bunch of Lacoste shirts that I'd buy from there for $5.
Were you good at that job?
Yeah.
You're good. You were like in your time. I never saw in action, but you were a good salesman, right? Weren't you good with the cell phones too?
I was probably the best. Yeah. I was making, well, sales. I was the best salesperson that Silver City ever had in their history for selling pins. Mm. Like they wanted 10 pins sold a night and I would sell 350. So
what? Yeah. They wanted to sell 10 pins and you sold 350.
Yeah.
Pins.
So they have this, they give you a microphone and you go out when I worked at Silver City Ancaster and they go sell these charity pins and they go, oh, the record was 25, but if you can sell 5 to 10 a night, that's amazing. First night I sold 150. They're like, oh my God.
What are the pins of?
They were gold. I think they were Shrek related or something, okay. But it was for charity.
How much were they?
$5, maybe $10.
Huh.
But I made a comedy routine around the whole thing and I was doing a little bit of improv based off guessing what the audience, how they would react.
Mm.
And I'd have a bunch of offshoot jokes prepared that made it look like I was doing improv, but really I had all these jokes prepared. Anyway, one night I sold 350 pins.
Wow. Crazy.
And the head of Silver City was there.
The pinhead?
Yeah. He wrote this big letter how I was the best salesperson he had ever seen. So I have this letter and it's like, it means a lot to me because he's like the head of all Silver Cities. But anyway, from that job, I sold cell phones at Rogers, hired by Sean Dawson, who got his car stolen. And I was making like, I think like 1500 every paycheck, only working 2 days a week.
So why did you leave a job in sales? It seems like you're really good.
Then it was very stressful. I did not like it. I didn't know anything about cell phones. I didn't know one thing about cell phones. I didn't even have a cell phone when I started the job. I didn't know what the plans meant, anything. I would just kind of put on this like fake personality of like a charming person. I was essentially acting, but I could be really funny. I would get dates.
Ooh.
Like a bunch of stuff happened that was like not me. I was so good at putting on this.
Do anything to sell a phone.
Act. Yeah. No, because one day this woman, I had always had a crush on her for years and years. And then I sold her a phone. And then I ended up calling her. Like, because I had her cell phone.
That's against the rules.
Wildly against company policy. It was against code. And if it went bad, it would have went terrible. But anyway.
But she accepted the date.
She accepted the date. Whoa. Yes.
Did you have like a false pretense for calling? Like, hey, I have your number because I just signed you up for your new phone. I'm calling just to make sure you're enjoying your service and you want to go on a date with me.
Truthfully, I texted her. Okay, so I was out at Shea.
Classic Hamilton
and
bar.
I was calling. I was like, I have the biggest crush on this person. And then I texted her and then 2 days went by and she didn't respond.
Oh, God. That was an agony.
So I'm like, you know, obviously going down Reddit rabbit holes, how to delete texts, so like how to remove them from the phone, all this stuff. And then she responded, I'm so glad you messaged me.
Whoa.
He's like, I was thinking about it too. And we ended up going on a date. But obviously that
only one date.
No, we went on like three.
Oh, nice. Do you miss performing? Because it feels like you're performing all the time. Now, like, you're doing improv, you're selling stuff, you're putting on a character. Like, you get your heart pounding in an interesting way. Now, I know you occasionally get on stage related to like proper comedy shows, but it feels like you used to have to be on a little bit more. Do you miss that?
Yeah, it was stressful though.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I was performing for like 10,000 people every single night. Because there's three movies used to be really popular. People forget that. But on a Friday night,
you like 400 people.
Every single show was sold out, filled with babes and filled with everything. Like there was so much pressure to perform. You're getting heckled by teenagers in like a horror film.
Uh-huh.
It just the pressure was a lot. But do I miss performing?
It gets a heart pounding though, man.
I don't like my heart pounding though.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Because you like kind of.
But I'm good at it. If I have a planned routine, I can really perform it well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But no, I don't miss it. Do you miss it at all, Mike?
Silver City, because I worked at the same movie theater for 3 months. I don't miss it. I didn't get to do what you did, though.
No, well, you weren't performing. I mean live performance. Oh, you were a live musician.
I like Max's sort of question in a work context, because I was a server. Oh, okay. I was a waiter at Swiss Chalet that was before I got the Much gig. So I got this Much gig when I was out of school. I turned 20 and I got this gig through the VJ Search, whatever. I got it through very unconventional means. Like, I didn't go to school or anything. But in that, like, 3 months before I got the gig, I was living at home with no prospects. Like, I was just literally hanging out on my couch smoking cigarettes and playing guitar.
What a life, man. Did I say I love my kids? Because I missed that life.
So what happened was my brother had been like, hey, they're interviewing people over across the street for, like, they're opening a new Swiss Chalet in Ancaster. I was like, what? And I was like, well, maybe I'll go check it out. Because my brother actually really wanted a job. He's like 16. I would think I was 19, turning 20. And I went over there. And I had washed dishes at Krabby Joe's in Hamilton, and it was the most demoralizing, brutal experience of my life. Like, the people were just, the servers were coming in, the cooks, everyone was yelling at me. And I'd bought these new khakis from the Gap, and they got fucking destroyed from the dishwater.
That was a huge era for khakis of the Gap.
Oh my God, yes.
I desperately wanted them. Yes,
I know. It took everything. I had to save it for my previous job. Yeah. So now I take the dishwashing job. I do one shift, and it was so demoralizing. I never went back. And they never paid me, by the way, Krabby Joe's. So when I went, you know, a couple months later to go interview at Swiss Chalet, I was like, listen, I was like, I'm a server. Like, I want to be a server. I'm like, I'm not going to be in the kitchen. I'm not going to be anything. And just, like, I was really confident. You know that, like, that that energy when you don't care if you get the job or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It served me so, because I was being charming, and there was a French-Canadian woman that had been brought in from, like, head Swiss Chalet to, like, help, you know, roll out this new thing. And she'd be like, Michael, you're a star. You're a star, Michael. And I was like, cool. I was like, great. So cool. I was one of them.
Yeah.
Star,
yeah. That's cool, man.
I was like, as long as I'm not washing dishes. So I was like, it was me, and there was one other male server, and then all women. Mm. And then all the dudes in the kitchen and whatever. My brother didn't end up getting a gig, by the way, which I guess in his interview, they asked him some weird, like, sort of surreal question. Like, if you could be any animal, what would you be?
Oh,
and
God.
Greg said, I would be a chicken so that you could eventually cook me up and I could feed the people of Swiss Chalet. I
want to
be
kind of funny.
Yeah. It's a funny sort of, what do you want from that kind of answer? But Greg said, when he said that, they just looked at, they gave him nothing. And this is like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, you knew my brother when he was 16.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. Well, yeah, I know him now. I can picture him. He was
like,
if
you remember
thing.
The show King of the Hill, he was very much like Bobby Hill. Like, oh, dad. Like, just kind of like oversized, get a grip, Aerosmith t-shirt. And like, just, you know, really cheery kid with his little circle glasses and a little bit of acne. So anyway, I just picture him trying to become like, you know, get a job at Swiss Chalet and just being nervous a bit in the interview. But anyway, he didn't get it. I slide in there. I loved that job. I did it for 3 months. And then I got Much Music. I went to the VJ Search, and everyone there was like rooting for me. And then they asked me to come back and work. And I remember when I had to tell my manager, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. And she was like, do you think you might want to, like, still come back and work on weekends for us? And I was like, Kim, I'm never coming back.
Yeah. Big city awaits. See
you
later.
Big city awaits. Yeah. But I did love that job. And the reason I loved it is because, like, I liked serving. Like, I had regulars, like, these little ladies would come in on Sundays after church. And also, I kind of did my own thing where they wanted me, like, upsell Jacks and Trigs or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not doing that to them. Like, that they're not drinking wine this morning. We got a thing going. So I just kind of did things my own way. And my one manager didn't like me because I was a bit rogue. And my other manager, like, loved that I was just kind of doing my own thing and had my crew or my crowd, the people that would come in and request me. I love that job. So, yeah, when Danica and I were talking, like, if I ever leave the industry, like, if I get out of TV or whatever.
Back to Swiss Chalet.
I might org serving or bartender. I don't know. Something social because I like talking.
You want a job at Odds?
I'm good now. I'm not leaving the industry yet. Okay. Now you try to get me out of the industry so I can work at your bar. Yeah.
Have you ever had a resume?
Yeah, I did. Wow. I did back then. And you know what? I had to... There's been a couple promotions here where you have to formally apply to get the promotion.
That's the only time I've ever had a resume.
Exactly.
Yes.
In the last, yeah.
It's a fake resume that I've never used. Yes. Only to get promoted.
You didn't have a resume for your other jobs?
I never had a resume. I don't know what it's like.
I don't even have a LinkedIn. I don't have a LinkedIn.
Me either. I don't know what it is.
I know.
No, but just because based on the fact that he had to work at all these different places, where as a teenager, you have to.
There were just cattle call interviews they used to do. I'd show up, be kind of funny. Then you get hired.
Things kind of always work out. And then so you don't need a resume or like.
Yeah, Sean hired me for Rogers. That was easy. Talese was a cattle call. Silver City cattle call. Here was a contest.
Mm-hmm. That was the thing. Yeah. For me, the brand of magic, like the thing that got it was the VJ Search. Like I was 8 out of 2,000 people. I got to come here for the weekend.
Yeah.
That changed my life. That was the piece of magic I needed. And then once you get in the door, that's the hardest part.
That was like career time too.
Yes.
Now isn't really, it's hard to have a career. You can work at a place for 2-3 years and hop move around. You probably need a resume, but
totally.
Yeah. We just got in that door.
Yeah. Good times. But,
Yeah, that instinct to just not give a fuck is such an interesting one. Or not give a fuck, but just be like,
yeah, loose.
Just loose. I was in Kensington Market yesterday, 2 days ago. I was with Ash, and we ran into Tessa Virtue and Morgan Riley.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And they were on a walk, and we were just like having a really nice catch up. Obviously, Tessa is so cool and impressive in so many different ways. And Morgan, I don't know him as well, but just very likable guy, sort of soft spoken, but smart. And the fact that like he and Tessa are together kind of says, I think speaks to him because Tessa's so impressive.
Yeah.
I had this idea. And again, this is an idea that will likely go absolutely nowhere, but yeah, I got lots of ideas. So then I was thinking to myself as we were talking, because the team had just been in Sweden and Tessa's doing other work and blah, blah, blah. I was like, maybe I'll just pitch Morgan on it right now. So like, Morgan, I got an idea.
I like it. Like, so you're doing a cold pitch in Kensington.
Yeah, in the middle of the street.
Love it.
But it was interesting too, because I almost preferred it there. Because if I had been like, I want to talk to Morgan, let's get on a Zoom, let me take him up for lunch. Like the context is so different. But because it was just so casual and I kind of don't care if it goes
yes.
one way, then I'm just like, okay. And I believe in the idea and I think it's a really cool idea. But the formality of it all would suck the fun out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to kind of pitch him, ask him for his advice. I just kind of wanted to know his advice, whether he thought it was viable
was he
or
into
not.
It?
And I think he has some really good feedback. And actually, Tessa had a comment that kind of solidified the idea itself that's made
great.
The idea. Yeah, and I was like, okay. And then I just left it. So anyway.
No, you get to something so fundamental. I've found just sort of what we've been doing, like with, you know, whatever our shows like that we've done with Mike Much in conversation with Uncrave, or like the desserts or anything that we're sort of doing as we sort of operate in this space, is if you have to set up a thing to pitch your thing, like if the reason to get together is to talk about the idea, you lose something. Mm-hmm. And this is why social networks are so goddamn important, because it's like, if it can happen, like people were going to be together for drinks anyway, and then the conversation naturally goes there. Mm-hmm. It just feels, I mean, maybe some people love being pitched or being sold something, but it's like, I'd rather talk about something exciting like that. It's like, oh, I ran into him in Kensington and we just started talking about this thing. Sometimes you have to set it up. You know what I mean? You don't have access to these things, but the most natural sort of like, the way that these things can come about is if it's conversational. Hey, I'm thinking about this thing, and it's not mm-hmm. like a, can you just set aside time at 11 a.m. on Monday that
because then you're asking something from yes. somebody. But if it's more just like, I kind of want your opinion, maybe this aligns with something that you're interested in, maybe it doesn't, but anyway, just like give me your 2 cents on it.
Yeah, it's like when someone's like, I'm gonna tell you a joke right now.
Yeah,
and it's really great. And then you're like, oh fuck, now all you're thinking about is the fake laugh.
Yeah,
but if someone just tells you an idea and it's good, you can genuinely either like it or not like it, because there's no pressure to like it. Yeah, meetings are tough.
Actually, back to the Benny Safdie thing. He started talking about how he got to know Nathan Fielder. And he was just like, oh, I was a fan of Nathan's. And then like when I was in LA, we'd kind of get together and just kind of hang out. And like one idea sort of led to another. And then like we kind of kept talking about it. And then we're like, oh, we should probably make this into a TV show. And obviously they're like in rarefied air. But I did like that it just sort of like stemmed
from
that.
Yeah, that's how ideas happen. You start a little text chain. Oh, I was thinking about this a little more. Oh, I was thinking about it a little more. And then it keeps compounding until you just have to do it.
Yeah. So I think we should wrap up this pod and talk about ideas.
Okay, let's do it. All right. I'm going to wrap up this pod and hit this record button off in 2 seconds. But until then, thank you to Nathan Nash. Thank you to Manager Ash. And thank you to the listeners for hanging out with us, because today was a great one, maybe the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Cetus. Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.